There are two major votes to be taken in the next month, and you can directly impact at least one of them. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's good to be back with you, Barry. I just want to let folks know out there, if it sounds a little funny, it's because we're having technical difficulties. My apologies for the sound quality, but we're doing our best to deal with it. We'll probably break in the middle of making this recording for me to go talk to a cable technician. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's like anything else, Chuck. Anything made by human beings is subject to failure.
Oh, absolutely.
And subject to error and subject to not working well, especially when you need it to work well.
Yes.
And, you know, Chuck, with all this technology that we have today, all the advancements we have, all the conveniences we have, we still are fallible human beings, and we still make errors, and even we design errors into things that we think are perfect, because there is no perfect thing. Such is the way with technology, with our recording, such is the way with our politics. And I say that because there are a couple of things that are coming up here, one very soon and the other one within a month, that are going to test how we as a people design and move forward with our civic enterprise, much less our, you know, technological world. The first one, obviously, and one we will talk about a little bit later, is the pending, as we say, this is recorded on Friday morning, with the announcement that there is a vote on cloture coming sometime today, on Friday, over the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court, with, if cloture is reached on Friday, then a vote of the full Senate on advancing Judge Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court bench to take the seat of Anthony Kennedy will likely happen on Saturday over the weekend. We're going to go into that a little bit more later on, but the other vote is one where our listeners and the rest of the voting populace of the state of Ohio can play a more direct role. Now, yes, we can play a role in the Kavanaugh. You can call your senators. You can go out and protest if you don't like it. You know, you can do all those things. But on this other particular piece, we have the opportunity to make a direct impact. And that's going to happen, well, for some who get absentee and early voting, it's going to start happening next week. For the rest of us who are more traditionalist in our thinking and in our organizing, it'll be on November the 6th on the election day for the general election, where we have to make some decisions, Chuck. And the biggest decision that we're making, most people think, oh, it's the U.S. Senate race, you know, between Sherrod Brown and Jim Renacci. Some think it's the governor's race between Mike DeWine and Rich Cordray. Some think it's our congressional seat races across the boards in the various districts. Some think it's the statehouse races. I would argue that all of those are great, and yes, they're all important, but none of them are going to be quite as have such long-term implications as a vote on a statewide ballot issue that's coming up. Now, I'm sure that, like many people, Chuck, there are not a great number of individuals right now who are, you know, really paying attention to what we're going to vote on. Some people don't even know who their own elected officials are who will probably be on those ballots in November. And that's okay, because, you know what, there's much more to life than politics, even though I know you and I, well, me, more so than you, because, you know, you actually have a real life and a real business and real, minute by minute issues and worries that you have to deal with. And being a grandparent, too, you have better things to pay attention to than what's going on in politics all the time. Unlike me, who that is my business. You know, I'm a lobbyist. I'm engaged in politics on a regular basis. As I sit back and look, I'm thinking, my goodness, I have been involved directly in the political arena for almost a quarter of a century now. It's a little frightening. But not much has changed in that quarter of a century, except for the idea, and again, with the ascension of Donald Trump to the presidency and the change in the tenor and the demeanor of the office of the president and the way they're handling politics from that perspective, yeah, that has been a change. And it's actually been a change, I believe, for the better. Most other things haven't changed much, but now what we have is a concerted push, and we're seeing it with the, you know, the situation with the nomination and the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. We're seeing it with all these various social movements. We're seeing it with the, I would say, increased rancor, and it's only increased because it serves the media to gin it up more. Rancor's always been there. It's just that now that the media is paying more attention to it, it seems like it's greater and greater. Between those who are of a conservative, traditional, status quo mindset, and those who are progressive, everything's got to change and change the way we want it to change, socialistic mindset. I really have to put the dichotomy between socialism and traditionalism, because that's kind of where we are now. This isn't really more Republican Democrat. This isn't more, you know, your conservative liberal. This is more socialist versus traditionalist. And we're seeing those clashes happen more and more, the screaming fits and all of the theatrics and the show that's going on around the Kavanaugh nomination. But behind all that, what we're also seeing is a push by those progressivists, those socialistic bents, to fundamentally change the way way business is being done in certain places. And of course, going back to our political hat, Ohio is a place where we're considered a bellwether. We're considered one of the major states. You know, for a presidential race, everybody says the presidency goes through Ohio. For some reason, Chuck, through Providence and other means, our little home state that we love, our soil here that we cling to, has political importance for people, because they believe that if you can shift the political philosophies and the political practices in Ohio, you can shift them for the nation. Whether that's true or not, anybody's best guess, but they're trying. And so the big try here in Ohio this time around is with a little ballot measure called State Issue 1. Now, State Issue 1, it depends on who you ask. Let me just put it this way. It depends on who you ask what State Issue 1 is all about. If you ask the folks who brought it to the ballot and who went out and collected signatures of people from around the state and submitted them and actually came up with enough signatures to get onto the November ballot with this initiative, you ask them what they're asking us to vote on is the Neighborhood Safety Drug Treatment and Rehabilitation Amendment. Sounds good, doesn't it, Chuck?
It sounds pretty like all amendment titles.
It really is. I mean, and again, if you're the proponents of this, you know, you are. That's how you want it to sound. You know, you want it to come and be positive. I mean, look at that. We've got neighborhoods. That's a good positive thing. It makes you feel good. Safety makes you feel good. Treatment. You know, that sounds really good. Rehabilitation. These are all positive words. They're all really, really, you know, definitely chosen to create a image, create a, I'll just say it, facade of what people are going to be voting on. So if you believe in neighborhoods and you believe in neighborhood safety and you believe in treatment for people who are addicted to drugs and you believe in rehabilitating those who've fallen, well, that's why they've named it this way. Because they want you to come and give them a vote, a yes vote, okay? Now, on the other hand, Chuck, on the other side of that coin, you have the way that the Ohio Ballot Board, who is the official body of the state of Ohio, it's the Secretary of State and a handful of folks, including legislators and private citizens who are appointed, they have to review after the signatures have been certified by the Secretary of State, which did happen, and then they mark it up for the ballot. And they have the right, and they have the responsibility, I should say, to accurately reflect what's in the amendment and to determine whether or not there's one amendment or more than one amendment and needs to be split up and be separate on the ballot. Well, their first decision was they chose to say that, no, it can just stay as one amendment. So we're only voting on one thing, and it's the only statewide issue on the ballot this year. But here is how they titled it. Now, remember, the proponents, the Neighborhood Safety, Drug Treatment, and Rehabilitation Amendment.
Yeah.
Great,
yeah.
Great. Here's the way the Ohio Ballot Board, who is responsible by law to the people of Ohio for accurately describing what's being put in front of them to vote on. This is the title they gave issue one. To reduce penalties for crimes of obtaining, possessing, and using illegal drugs. That's the title they gave it. Now, did you see neighborhood safety in there?
I did not.
did you see treatment in there?
I did not.
Did you see rehabilitation in there?
I did not.
No, but what you saw is reducing penalties for crimes of obtaining, getting, holding, possessing, and using drugs. Not over-the-counter prescription medication, Chuck. Not your standard stuff you can go in and buy your supplements or your aspirin or any other things you can get on the shelf in your local pharmacy, or you can go to your doctor and get a script for and go in. For reducing penalties for the crimes of obtaining, possessing, and using illegal drugs. What drugs are illegal, might you ask? Well, the actual specific statewide issue one, this is what will appear on your ballot, all right? And along with the full language of the ballot initiative, and we'll get into some of that too, because I actually have the petitions that the proponents cycled around to get their signatures on. Now, how they sold it to people, it's interesting. But here's what the ballot board said. They say, if adopted, the amendment would, first, require sentence reductions of incarcerated individuals, except individuals incarcerated for murder, rape, or child molestation, by up to 25% if the individual participates in rehabilitative work or educational programming. Well, there's rehabilitation right there, right, Chuck? So are they right?
Well, they're not right.
well, they're not. You're right. They're not right. Okay. So, and again, there's like there's six different bullet points here. So we're going to go through them one at a time here. So that's our first bullet point. It's requiring, which means it's a mandate, sentence reductions, which means you get to take time off of your already given sentence for someone who's already incarcerated. Okay. I want people to understand that clearly. This would apply not to new crimes that are being committed. This would apply to crimes that have already been adjudicated under current law.
That's a major legal problem, which will probably not pass muster under a court challenge. And there's a
may very well not. And of course, the proponents, and we'll talk about their money and their backing later. But the proponents, you know, pretty much understood that nobody was going to try to challenge them, you know, legally getting to the ballot,
yeah,
other than them messing up and not getting the summary right or not getting enough signatures.
I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV, like the old ads. And if you don't remember it, you're too young. No, what that is it's called an ex post facto law. And what an ex post facto law is a law passed after the fact of a commission of a crime or to make it illegal. So essentially what you've done is you've handed out a sentence based on the existing law, and now you're saying, well, I see where they're coming from this, but now you're saying, well, we've changed the law, and therefore we need to reduce all the sentences.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
And that's an ex post facto law. That's a major problem. Not to mention the fact that, I mean, that's just looking at this little tiny corner of this law, of this constitutional change. By the way, I am absolutely opposed to changing the Constitution every time somebody has a hangnail.
Right. Well, and again, Chuck, most of what's in this amendment are things that are not necessarily needing to have a constitutional change. There are things that if a large number of people in districts around the state, and let's remember something here, folks. When they submitted signatures to the ballot, they had 340-some thousand ballot signatures.
Okay.
That was enough to get them on the ballot. How many registered voters do we have in the state of Ohio, Chuck?
Let's see. What's our current population? Is what, about 11 million?
11.4 million.
Yeah. I think we only have a couple of million registered voters.
No, actually, we have about 7.8.
We have that many registered voters. Of course, they never come out and vote.
Right. Well, you know, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5 million registered Democrats and 2 to 3 million registered Republicans, and then a number who are registered independent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it isn't the question. Yeah, you're right. Not that many come out to vote at any time whatsoever. I think the last time we had anything remotely resembling a really, really high voter turnout was during the marriage amendment in 2004.
I was going to say, and we got like 4 or 5 million people to come out and vote, didn't we? It was
It was big. It was like 80% of the registered voting populace actually voted in that
election.
Yeah,
you mean the one where they defined marriage specifically, and then the Ohio legislature did whatever it could to come out and work its way around it? Yeah.
Right, yeah. And the courts tried to ignore it as best they possibly could. Yes.
Right.
That's the one. But so 340,000+ actual people who said, yeah, I want to see this on the ballot, got it on the ballot, which isn't 10%. It's less than 5%. Right?
Right.
I mean, it's 10% of the number of voters who came out in the last gubernatorial election, because that's the number that any of these signature gathering efforts is based on, is 10% of the previous gubernatorial races turnout. Well, Chuck, think about it. Who did we have in the last gubernatorial race? It was John Kasich going for his second term against Ed Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Not a gigantic turnout, as I recall.
Not a gigantic turnout. So they got the benefit of not having to collect. I mean, when we were doing the marriage amendment in 2004, we ended up having to collect 500,000 signatures. And that was 10%. So, you know, you're looking at 5 million potential votes. There were 5 million who voted in that previous gubernatorial race before the 2004 election. So there's different, and those numbers change all the time. So they took advantage of a smaller turnout to get this on the ballot. But again, so let's go back to this. This, it requires up to 25% sentence reduction. So if somebody gets put in jail for, let's say, 5 years, for possessing or distributing illegal drugs, this would require them to have their sentence reduced up to 25%, a year and a quarter. So a year and 3 months could be taken off that sentence. For what? If they participate in rehabilitative work or educational programs. Now, let me stop you right there, Chuck. Does the word participate indicate complete?
No.
Does the word participate indicate success in grasping the concepts of the material that is being offered?
Oh, heavens no.
can participate mean you go down, you sign in on the sign-in sheet, and you sit in the back of the room basically goofing off during the entire class, and you get nothing out of it?
Yeah, you throw spit wads at the teachers. You sneak out whenever you think nobody's looking. Yeah, that's participate. You've basically showed up, got your name on the line as having been there. And
yeah.
My guess is that classes would be taught by liberals who don't really care whether you're there or not, and you will sign in, and a whole bunch of people will walk right out right after they sign in.
Yep. Well, and again, I've worked with organizations that do programming in our prisons, okay, and in our jails. If they sign into a program, they have to be there they have to stay through the entire program.
Right. Yeah.
But there's nothing that requires them to successfully complete the program. The successful completion is only for their benefit. But in this one, it requires the state or the local government, you know, the county jail or whatever, requires them to reduce their sentences if they just show up for these programs. Now, again, let's talk about this. Again, going back, the proponents, the sponsors of this amendment, called it the Neighborhood Safety Drug Treatment and Rehabilitation Amendment. So drug treatment and rehabilitation from drugs. There's nothing in the amendment that specifies that any of this rehabilitative work or educational programming has to have any kind of content that relates to drug use and abuse. They could take Metal Shop 101.
I was going to say, yeah.
They could take, you know, Writing Your Resume 102, or they could take, you know, having a social worker come in to talk about their repressed childhood, and it'll count against their drug sentence.
Well, yoga as a relaxation and technique. Yeah, technique and as a way to get at your addiction is to do an Eastern religious practice.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's what we're talking about. It could be any of these type of things because it's not. It doesn't specify. It doesn't specify that this programming, whether rehabilitative work or educational programming, has to be related to or germane to their crime. Now, okay, that's the first bullet point. So that tells you there's a big weakness there. Okay. Sounds really good, but when you start digging into it, it shows that, well, how's this actually helping people to, you know, stop doing drugs? We're just basically saying, well, hey, if you just go around and, you know, go and sign up for a bunch of classes, you can get out earlier and get back to whatever you were doing. And I'll talk about another bullet point here in just a couple minutes that actually makes that almost redundant. So the next thing that this amendment would do, according to the state ballot board, who again has to report it accurately to the voters of Ohio, it would mandate that criminal offenses, now we're not talking about accidental or misdemeanor things, Chuck, we're talking about criminal offenses, of obtaining, possessing, or using any drug, such as, and they have a list here, first thing on the list, fentanyl. Chuck, what's fentanyl?
Fentanyl, it is a, really, it's an animal drug.
It's an animal tranquilizer.
It's a tranquilizer. It's used to put down elephants and, you know, Cape buffalo and gigantic animals that are being, you know, that need veterinary care or are being captured and that kind of thing.
Right. And of course, then there's an even stronger one called carfentanil, but that also would be considered in this.
Well,
carfentanil is completely illegal across the board because that's the elephant tranquilizer. That stuff, a grain of it can kill you.
Well, grain, yeah, that's a small amount. Let's be clear about what fentanyl is. If you're hearing about the opioid, the people being found in their cars unconscious or dead with the needle still in their arm, That's because their heroin has been doped with fentanyl.
Yeah, they've cut it with fentanyl. And we had one there where we're having a big string of deaths, like one right after the other. They found it was a batch that was cut with carfentanil. So, yes, this stuff. Okay, and again, all right. So basically, if you obtain, possess, or use fentanyl, and then here's the rest of the list, Chuck: heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, LSD, or other controlled substances. That means anything that's under on the controlled substance list, which means it's illegal to have it. And you know, there's like different. It's on any of those. If you have a criminal offense of obtaining, possessing, or using any of these hard drugs, it cannot be classified as a felony, but only a misdemeanor.
Yeah, I'm sitting here reading Ballotpedia while you're going through this, and they've bullet pointed the pros and cons. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. I'm sitting here thinking in terms of the ads that I'm hearing. Now,
oh, yes.
I'm not hearing any vote no ads, of course. You know, who's organized on a no campaign? A lot of people don't even know this is
there. Actually, is an organization that's coming together around it. It's just that it's been painfully slow, and they don't have a whole lot of money to throw at.
You got 3 weeks left, folks. You better get to work.
Yeah, I'd tell me about it. Yes,
but here's the problem. They're actually pushing this as moving towards safer communities. Well, okay, the only way you're going to make safer communities and please pardon my flippant, apparently flippant attitude about this. The only way you're going to make safer communities is if you look the other way while things are mixed with fentanyl and the people that are stealing, committing robberies, breaking into homes, stealing cars, beating up little old ladies for their purse, is if they die of an overdose from the fentanyl, from their heroin injection. That way, suddenly we'll be safer. Because this particular ballot, this constitutional amendment, will not only make us not safer, it will make us extremely more dangerous. Now, there are conservative voices out there calling for this thing, and I really just don't get it.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes.
Do I really think that some of the drug laws are absurd? Yeah, I do.
But do you think this is the way to go about
this
fixing
is that? Not the fix.
Yeah, exactly.
This is definitely not the fix. This is basically swatting a fly with a 5-pound sledgehammer.
Yep, it is. Okay, now here's the next bullet point on and this is what is going to be explained on the ballot. So I hope people take the time. Most people don't take the time to read through this stuff, but reading this information is crucial. The next thing says it prohibits jail time as a sentence. So there it's telling the courts you can't give out any jail time as a sentence for obtaining, possessing, or using such drugs, that is, those controlled substances like fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, LSD, etc., until an individual's third offense within 24 months.
Oh, within 24 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're seeing it in more detail than I'm seeing it. In 24 months. So in 2 years, if you commit three major possession felonies, if you are busted three times for
possessing, blah, 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 these controlled substances, if your third hit comes within 24 months, then they can, the only thing they can do on the first two is give you probation.
Okay.
Where you go in and lie to a probation officer?
Yeah.
If a court has someone in front of them who has obtained, possessed, and is using meth or coke or heroin or LSD or fentanyl, for God's sake, how can that court get that person the drug treatment and rehabilitation they need if the only thing they can do is issue probation?
Well, the answer
is because your problem is, in order to get into many drug treatment programs, most of these people, think about it, they've got money to buy drugs. They don't have money to do much else.
Right.
And they get money to buy drugs by stealing from other people. Around our area, every day you're hearing about somebody's 4x4 or their motorcycle or their, lawnmowers or whatever being stolen right off their properties. Talking to a guy the other day and he's furious. He has a $60,000, farm machine stolen.
Wow.
Pickup trucks.
How do you sell a stolen farm implement?
Trust me, these guys don't think. They don't think. What they do is they steal it and then they take it to the scrap.
Yeah.
Because they're not some of these folks are not smart enough. Now others, it's a ring. They can intimidate the people around them to keep them from reporting on them because they're the ones dealing these drugs. And trust me, there'll be many dealers who will take advantage of this amendment should it pass, because they can't
absolutely
get jail time. All they can get is probation. And if you get caught, let's say you get caught with a baggie of pot, which, unless you've got your medical card, would be illegal. And you have heroin and fentanyl, and you've got tabs of LSD, and you've got a little baggie of cocaine on you. Guess what? You can look at them and say, "Well, that was for personal use." Personal use. And unless it's your third catch in 2 years, judge can't do anything. They just got to give you probation. Now, if you violate your probation, they might be able to pick you up on that. But instead of actually being able to, divert you into, incarceration and then programming that's key to it. And I found out, I was listening and talking with folks who do this, and they were like, many drug treatment programs, because they receive federal grants, they are restricted by those grants and by federal law that they cannot accept anybody who hasn't been adjudicated with felony.
Right. Yeah, so here we have – now, could that change? And the answer is yes, but what's it going to take?
It's going to take federal. It's going to take a change in federal programming,
exactly.
And federal law, not in the state law. That means between the time that if this passes and is adopted in Ohio and the time the feds long-term – now, again, the feds just passed a major bill this last week. Rob Portman, our U.S. senator, was one of the key drivers on it about opioid interdiction. It didn't look anything like this amendment, Chuck. There's nothing in it that basically would change federal programming guidelines so that would change. So, this is a disconnect. What this really is doing is basically saying you need to be soft on drug crimes. Now, if you look in Ohio, we have a major drug epidemic. It's in every community.
Oh, and it's especially bad in rural communities.
And it's especially bad in rural communities, and it's not your prescription. It's not the ecstasy, and it's not lorazepam and Percocets and whatever else. We got fentanyl, we got heroin, we got meth, etc. The stuff that we're having the worst trouble with is the things that this amendment would say, oh, well, no, you can't send them to jail. You can't, divert them that way. Now, okay, here's the other thing, Chuck. Let's say you're smart, okay? And if you're doing drugs, you're not that smart. But let's say you are cagey, and you know full well you got busted on this date. And so you went around, and you were still doing it, but you were slick enough to stay away from it. And then you got busted again, but that was like a year and a half later. Well, all you have to do is wait 6 months and stay careful, because once the 2 years passes, again, the next time you get busted, if it's outside the 24 months from the time you first got busted.
Oh, the clock resets.
It's probation,
yeah.
Again.
It's play clock. First and 10 and 15 minutes on the clock.
Yep, exactly. Okay, fourth bullet point of the six on this. This amendment, if adopted, would allow an individual convicted of obtaining, possessing, or using any such drug, that's all those ones we talked about, prior to the effective date of the amendment, here's your ex post facto thing going on, that the individual can ask a court to reduce the conviction to a misdemeanor, regardless of whether or not the individual has completed the sentence. Think about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are in jail today for a felony offense of having these drugs. And if you look, it doesn't say anything about whether or not that the possession was with intent to distribute or not.
Yeah, that's not the question.
But it is the question, because
of course it should be the question,
loophole, because if it doesn't specify that, then folks who are in jail for possession with intent to distribute because it was a quantity large enough to distribute can also petition the court, and the courts, pretty much, it looks like the courts are bound to reduce the conviction to a misdemeanor, and once you reduce the conviction to a misdemeanor, Chuck, you know what happens? They have to be released from the prison.
Oh, of course. You cannot serve a prison sentence for a misdemeanor. You have to be in the county jail.
Regardless of whether the individual has completed the sentence. Now, there's one thing it doesn't say, but if you read it, it's that argument from silence thing. It also doesn't say that the individual has to complete any kind of programming. That the individual has to actually have any kind of drug treatment, that the individual has to show any kind of rehabilitation. It's just, you pass this amendment, and these guys are going to go petition the courts, and the courts are going to look at it, and they're like, our hands are bound, and they've got to reduce sentences to misdemeanors and kick these people out of jail.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
A lot of people, yes, are just simply addicts. They're prisoners of their addiction and that kind of thing, but there's a heck of a lot of people out there who you're talking about that you're going to let out of prison who use the fact that they are a dealer and got caught, mm-hmm. And who are doing nasty things like human trafficking because he's got women on the string who absolutely need his meth or his heroin in order to feed the monster.
Function.
And what have you done? You've basically said, It's a misdemeanor. No big deal. Well, what the argument, the counter argument will be is, well, we would put him in jail for human trafficking. How are you going to get his women he's trafficking for his dope? How are you going to get them to testify against him? Because they know if he goes to jail for trafficking, they're cut off from supply. And not only that, this will not make them compelled to go out and get treatment. There'll be a few, but a very tiny percentage will simply go out and find another human trafficker who will supply their drug needs. The ads I'm seeing are infuriatingly stupid. I'll be quite honest. They are logical fallacy potpourries where it's help make Ohio communities safer by making sure that people who are addicted to drugs don't go to jail for it. Now, how are we going to fix it? Some of the most infuriatingly stupid remarks that I've heard in favor of this is we're going to fix it with education. Barry, if you don't have an education, you can get one anytime you want one, especially if you're low income, for free.
True.
If you didn't finish your high school diploma, guess what? You can go back and get a GED for free.
Yeah, for free.
In a lot of cases, if you're low enough income, which is where this is a major problem, but remember, let's not put a face on it that's not correct, because there's a lot of kids who have a lot of money who are addicted to heroin and meth.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that kind of thing. But you can go to college for free or at a very reduced rate. You really want vocational training? Oh my gosh, there are grants everywhere to get you. This bugaboo about education is going to fix the problem. This is progressivism writ large. Failed progressivism writ large. We were going to fix all these problems in the 60s, if you recall, by mm-hmm. simply instituting liberal changes in colleges. How's that working out?
Incredibly well.
we've got an entire generation of raging socialists, social justice warriors who really, all you got to do is read things in the comment section on YouTube. I saw something about people shoplifting and people catching them, product loss officers, but just citizens catching people stealing and saying, "Hey, right. You stop this right now. I'm calling a manager," and like doing citizens arrests and things on these people. And the people, and what do we see in the comment section? Never rip off the corner store, but it's okay to steal from Walmart, because right. they steal from everybody every day. You know why I go to Walmart? Because I can get stuff for a good price.
Exactly.
They're not stealing from me, man. I go in there willingly and buy stuff from them because I can get a good price on it. If I want something designer, I don't go to Walmart. I go to if I want something higher end, I don't go to Walmart.
Yeah, I go to Amazon.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or honestly, I'm one of those weird people who likes dealing with local businessmen, because you know what? If it breaks, I go into him and I say, "What's the deal?" And he gives me another one. Why? Because he's under that pressure. Now, that being said, let's go back to it. Education.
Yeah, sure.
Education is not going to fix this problem.
No, it's not.
You're going to have the most wonderfully educated drug addicts on the planet who still rob convenience stores to feed their habit, or
right.
or die in the parking lot of a convenience store. You know, I'll give you the rundown. I live in Newark. I actually live outside of Newark. I'm out in the country, and sometimes I'll go down in the summertime. I'll go down 21st Street, and this happened to me last year. I was sitting there, and here's a guy laying in the parking lot, slumped out of his car. Now the ambulance is there. And it's a young man, so I'm assuming it wasn't an old guy who ate too much Chipotle and had a heart attack, right? It's a young man laying in a parking lot. And I'm like, oh, man, here we go again. Because, you know, odds on, it's a heroin overdose. And they're right. giving him Narcan as quick as they can pump it into his system. Well, what does that mean? I look in the paper. You expect to see stuff like that reported in the paper, right? The Newark Aggravate, as we call mm-hmm. it here. I look in the Aggravate. What does it say? Dispatchers report nothing of interest since yesterday afternoon.
Right, exactly.
They're not even
because it's become rote.
It's well, not only that, it's become to the point that nobody wants to report on this problem because it's so ugly. Nobody wants to think about it, so they don't report about it. Okay, how many times a day do you suppose that happens in Columbus, and how many times at night or in the Columbus debauch do you read about it? And the answer is, you're right. It's so common that they don't even report on it.
Right. Well, even if they did, I wouldn't see it because I don't read the debauch.
The debauch. Yeah.
I have higher standards.
What an,
so,
what
a,
yeah.
But
well,
no,
look,
I don't even have to do that, Chuck. I can tune in my local news programming here because, you know, I live fairly close to both Huntington and Charleston, West Virginia, where I am.
Yes.
You know, we had one the other day where a couple, you know, heroined up in their car and drove their car right into a little place called Ritter Park, which is a community park in downtown Huntington. Right into where the kids were playing. Now, thankfully, they hit a pole and it stopped their car because, well, they were both passed out.
Well, look how many times have we heard stories where mom and dad are both dead in the car with their kids strapped into their kid seats.
Been there, seen that too. Yeah, exactly. Now, we've had here just locally, I mean, there's a couple of restaurants here in town, one out by the fairgrounds and another, where they've come and they've, you know, the bathroom's been locked for a long time. They open the bathroom door and there's somebody sitting on the toilet with a needle in their arm dead.
The Lenny Bruce problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyhow, Chuck, this amendment's going to take care of all that. Now let's go to the next point. It says, because this amendment would require, that's putting a gun to the head of the state legislators, require any available funding based on projected savings to be applied to state-administered rehabilitation programs and crime victim funds. Sounds great, right?
Yeah, sounds pretty.
Chuck, projected savings.
Yeah.
Okay. They're what they're saying is you have to budget before you know where the money is. And so if they, and of course they'll independently have their own folks, you know, saying we project the savings of $18 million incarceration costs and blah 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 blah. So you must put $18 million into these, you know, these rehabilitation programs. Problem with that?
Yeah.
Really what that is that's just to basically create more liberal progressive jobs.
It's a job creation program. Here's the other problem, Barry. First of all, how do you get people who are addicted to meth and heroin and any number of other drugs, even marijuana, and yes, it is addictive psychologically.
Yes.
How do you get those people to show up for work? And how do you keep them from stealing you blind while they're at work? So there's that cost involved. And how do you keep people who can't then are fired and because they can't meet up with the criteria to keep their job and then go out and rob and steal and shoplift and do all kinds of things? What about those costs? I'm guaranteeing you it's going to be more than $18 billion.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Okay, then let me add one more. What about? How are you going to get someone into one of these rehabilitation programs if they don't want to go?
Oh, well.
How do we do it right now?
You
do
have
it
to
right now because it's court ordered.
That's right. And sometimes it's in prison.
It's either you're put in jail or B, you have to, in lieu of getting charged with a felony, must attend and complete court-ordered rehabilitation programming. But
yep.
If you remember, what I said just earlier is they can't do that because you are not going. You can't give them jail time until they get to the third offense. And if the criminal offenses of obtaining, possessing, or using a drug such as that can't be classified as a felony but only a misdemeanor, you can't require someone or force someone to take programming for a misdemeanor.
Right, exactly.
Now, okay, and then here's the last wrinkle. Okay, this amendment would also require a graduated series of responses, such as, and it's really kind of a hierarchical list, like this is the first thing you can do, this is the next thing, this is the next thing. Community service, drug treatment, or jail time for, and I love this phrasing, minor non-criminal probation violations. Okay, Chuck, what would be a minor non-criminal probation violation?
Not showing up for your probation meeting with your probation officer.
Think deeper.
Non-criminal probation violation. Well, let me see.
How about a misdemeanor for obtaining, possessing, or using any drugs such as fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, LSD, or other controlled substances?
Well, that's still criminal.
But it's a misdemeanor.
It's
a misdemeanor. You can have that. But remember, the first two times you get caught, the only thing that can give you is probation.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Counting a misdemeanor as a non-criminal, saying that a fentanyl possession is jaywalking.
It would seem to be that, because we're reducing these down to misdemeanors.
Yeah. And well, they're misdemeanors below the level of things like assault and certain kind. There are misdemeanor assaults. You know, you get in a fight in a bar and that kind of thing. And
yeah,
that's usually misdemeanor assault. Things below that. So yeah, I see where you're going with that.
And again, it's going to be a situation of how is it going to be interpreted by a court who's already told you can't give them jail time. You can't classify it as a felony, and you have to, you know, start with this graduated series of responses. It's like, okay, how is any of this getting them to getting rid of their drug habit, stop dealing drugs, et cetera, et cetera? It doesn't. Nothing in this amendment does what the proponents have named it to do, which is increase neighborhood safety, because it's the neighborhood safety amendment. Drug treatment. Oh, well, yeah, we talk about treatment and we force the legislature to put a bunch of money into treatment programs that nobody is required to go to. And rehabilitation. What rehabilitation? I'm in jail for a criminal offense. You pass this amendment. I petition the court. They got to reduce me to a misdemeanor and I walk. And it doesn't matter if I've completed my sentence or completed any programming, because all I had to do was participate in the program to start with. That is, show up.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's it. No, this is,
I'm sure that proponents of issue one would argue till they're blue in the face that I'm wrong, or representing it, I'm mischaracterizing it, and I'm looking at them like,
no, come on.
You know what? I'm not seeing it.
Well, let's go back the other direction for a minute. The fact is that the whole drug policy thing is goofy. Let's cut marijuana out of the picture, even though it is a psychologically addictive drug. Is it damaging? Yes, it is. Is it permanently mentally damaging? Yep, afraid so. And it's genetically damaging as well, folks. It's all the things your parents told you. Well, let's put it this way. I'm 62 years old. It's all the things my parents told me. And then scientists came out and said and laughed at it and said it wasn't true. Now they're coming out and saying, well, yeah, it really was true all along. Nonetheless, alcohol is also bad for you. It's also a problem in society, DUI and all that. But you notice nobody wants to make DUI a misdemeanor. You know, to do the comparison, basically what you're doing is that being in possession of a drug that can kill you, not only you, but the people you run into with your car when you're under the influence, or the children that you kill when you run them over, alcohol is much worse than that, apparently. Now, what they're saying is, what they argue is that, we're spending too much money and we're sending all these people to prison and they're sitting in prison and they're doing this and that and it's really not getting treatment. Well, guess what? You can get treatment in prison. Barry, you've been involved in stuff where with true rehabilitative stuff with the Ridge Project, where people come out of prison and they have to be clean when they come out of prison and they are trained in how to do things like driving trucks. Getting a truck driving job. So they have a good, can they fall back in the trap? Sure they can. Everybody that's addicted can fall back in the trap. And I want to talk about that before we get out of here. We've got about 8 or 9 minutes left. Just real quick, my church is having an addiction conference. If you want to understand yes. what addiction is, how it works, and it really, you're not going to get a lot of the psychological mumbo jumbo. Dr. George Scipione has been a counselor for years. He's a college professor, and he is a Christian counselor, and he's going to come in and talk about the causes. He's going to come in and talk about the impact on the community. Who is an addict? What is wrong with the addict, and how do you fix the addict? Because can you fix an addict? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And the fact is, we are having him into our church on October 27th. At mm-hmm. what church
That's
is
Saturday.
It? That's a Saturday. It's going from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's at Providence Presbyterian Church, 7095 Summit Road Southwest, Pataskala, Ohio. We'd like to know you're coming because we are serving lunch. Part of the thing is it's a lunch conference. There is no cost. And the teacher, George Scipione, he's been involved with biblical counseling for half a century. He holds a doctorate in biblical counseling. He's a director of the Institute for Biblical Counseling and Discipleship in San Diego, California. He has 44 years of pastoral experience. You suppose he's seen a drug addict or two in his time of doing biblical counseling? I'd say so. Yes, he has. This is going to be a very good conference. You can register at, here it is, the triple W's, eventbrite.com. We'll put a link up to that.
Yes.
It's www.addiction-2018.eventbrite.com. We'd like to have you there, so you can because it is right before the election, and we'd like you to come in and hear about this. This is an important topic, Barry, and honestly, I don't understand the arguments. This is a candidate for governor, Richard Cordray. We need to be tough on crime, but we also need to be smart in how we use our limited resources to combat the opioid epidemic that is ravaging our state. Law enforcement leaders all around Ohio tell me that we can't arrest our way out of this problem, and I agree. We should be getting addicts the treatment they need, not giving them jail sentences at a huge cost to taxpayers. Okay, that's a straw man. You're not Yes. jailing, for the most part, the addicts. You want the drug dealers. And yet what you're Yeah. doing with issue one is saying, you got caught with some, and you get three strikes before you're out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, three strikes in one inning.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I went over to the actual text that would be included into the Constitution of the State of Ohio under Article 15, Section 12, and should this amendment pass. And I went down to their definitions, Chuck, because, you know, you and I were trying to kind of bumping around here trying to figure out what a non-criminal violation meant. Here's how they define it.
A non-criminal violation of the terms of probation includes, but is not limited to, actions such as a drug use relapse. I'm going to stop right there. It says a few things like missing curfew, missing a probation meeting, changing an address without permission, failing to pay a fine, or failing to perform required community service. First thing, though, a drug use relapse. So, they go relapse into drugs, they get pulled over, they're found with drugs because they've relapsed. Under this, that would be considered a non-criminal probation violation. And, Chuck, looking at the specific language that will actually be added to the Constitution under Article 15, Section 12, if this Issue 1 actually passes, and God, let's hope it does not, praying that that's the case, I looked at this, and here is how they define a non-criminal violation. You and I talked about that, and we were kind of up in the air about what it looked like. So a non-criminal violation by the amendment is defined, it says it includes, but is not limited to, actions such as a drug use relapse. Okay, so that's the first thing. So if you are on probation because you were possessing or using drugs, and during your probation you start using drugs again, that's considered a non-criminal violation. So you can't, they can't do anything about it. Now, of course, it includes things like missing curfew, missing your probation meeting or being late, changing an address, failing to timely pay a fine, or failing to perform required community services. So there is a situation where they can't do anything to you, even if you are so I say that might create a situation. Let's say you have the 2 in 24 months where you're caught for possession or use of a controlled substance, and the worst thing they can do is give you probation. Well, it looks to me like with this, that if you get caught for the third time, you can just basically say, I had a relapse. That's considered a non-criminal violation. Therefore, it's...
Yeah, it's a defense.
How does a court handle that?
It's a defense.
Affirmative defense.
Exactly.
Against going to jail after the second time in 24 months.
Third time, yeah.
Yeah, so after the second, so for third or subsequent, because I guess you could just keep saying I keep relapsing. But, of course, if then that means that your first two are only misdemeanors, and you can say that that's a non-criminal probation violation because you got probation for the first two, and that you have it, they catch you with it again, you've relapsed, it's a non-criminal violation, therefore the judge can't sentence you, it can't be sentenced as a felony. Which means they can't direct you to treatment. Because, again, I don't believe you can direct somebody to treatment. You might say as a condition of their probation, but I don't believe this amendment allows that. Because it has to specify that, and all it specifies is no greater than probation can be given for having, possessing, or using drugs, these drugs or drug paraphernalia twice in 24 months. So I think that creates this infinite loop system.
Barry, this thing is a nightmare. And do you know who's in support of this directly?
Well, I know who funded it to get it on the ballot.
Yeah,
you
betcha.
The funding came from two sources. Two sources alone. The first was a $1.5 million each from the Open Society Foundation,
yep,
and the Tides Foundation, which are both George Soros.
Soros, yeah.
The other $2 million, a million each, came from Priscilla Chan and Mark Zuckerberg. Now, Priscilla Chan happens to be Priscilla Chan Zuckerberg, his wife,
right,
of Facebook. So basically, you have Mark Zuckerberg and George Soros who have completely funded getting this radical progressivist move to the ballot, where if it passes, and I believe as it goes, we would never be able to put anybody in jail again for drugs, and we wouldn't be able to get them into treatment.
Exactly. Look, again, I will say current drug policy is stupid. But again, swatting a fly with a 5-pound sledgehammer, which is what this is not the answer. We need to let the legislature work out these issues.
Right.
And in fact, the kind of impetus they need. This kind of ballot issue is fine, but please, I'm going to tell you right up front, vote no on this monstrosity.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're both advocating, even though the Christian Coalition of America, Chuck, is running radio ads, and you know, may God have mercy on their souls for
absolutely
this. Absolutely. They have fully embraced the progressive left, and they are basically, you know, creating this a false environment that this is a Christian thing to do,
yeah,
to support this amendment.
Yep.
Well, it's not, because it does nothing toward real rehabilitation, toward real interdiction for drugs, toward keeping neighborhoods safe and protected, toward making sure that kids and school kids at school and everybody else will not have the specter of drugs. I mean, look, a kid can bring drugs to the school,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, okay.
And if they get busted, then it's just a misdemeanor.
I hate to break in. We are out of time. Okay, vote no on issue one. Please, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any ability to think at all, we ask you to vote no on issue one. It's a monstrosity. It will not fix anything. It'll take a bad problem, make it worse. That being said, don't forget the Addiction Conference at Providence Presbyterian Church in Pataskala, Ohio on October 27th from 10 to 4:30. More information will be on our website. And you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.